This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Calling Grass Nation, we are conducting an audience survey at gum.fm/touchgrass. And we want to hear from you so that we can keep making content you love.
You know this. We know this. There are ads on our podcast. Mm-hmm. We want to improve that experience. But in order to do so, we need to know a little bit more about you, our audience. This survey is quick, easy, and a free way to support this podcast. It'll take 2 minutes and you'll be helping us out so much by doing it.
Yes, so go to gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our audience survey. That's gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our survey. Thank you for using your precious time online to help us with our podcast.
We love you.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths but have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
You got mail.
Hi, I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Millie Tamaris.
And this is
Go Touch Grass,
the podcast where we log in
so you can log off.
Millie and I are two chronically online comedians, and on this podcast, we break down the week in internet discourse, viral memes, TikTok trends, and niche influencer drama so that you can go do literally anything else.
And this week, it is Memorial Day weekend, so... Or it has been. So we are going to, as a little treat, because we can't get to the stew, mm-hmm. we are going to release a special, special episode that we did on our Patreon about the Bean Dad saga.
Yes.
So, yes.
For anyone who doesn't subscribe to our Patreon yet, this is a little treat for you. We do a series called Search History on Patreon where we go back and we break down a viral discourse from the past. This is one that Millie did, and yes. it was crazy. There's a reveal in it that I think about all the time. So
yes. I just also will say that at the time, my voice was a little raspy, so I do sound like Macy Gray. Macy Gray is not hosting this podcast.
No,
it's Millie Tamaris and Elise Morales.
But who doesn't want to listen to Macy Gray?
Well, well, now you are, so.
Yeah, all right, guys. Please enjoy this episode. We'll be back next week with a regular episode.
Yes.
I hope you had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
Yes.
We were at a friend's wedding. We had a really good.
All right.
Get into it.
You got mail.
Hello, everybody. Welcome.
Welcome.
To Go Touch Grass.
Go Touch Grass.
I'm your host, Millie Tamaris.
I'm your host, Elise Morales.
And I just have to apologize. I will be anchoring this, but I'm aware that my voice sounds like shit. And I've been drinking tea all day. I drank a lot. Like, I've been drinking water. The lady at this coffee shop was like really nice Mexican lady, and she's like, I will make you this tea, and it's like had ginger and honey and a bunch of shit.
Ugh.
And still, alas.
Alas. But it's
the season.
Tis the season for your voice kind of sounding fucked up, and unfortunately we podcast, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah. You
know? We're not gonna not podcast. Give content to our Patreon subscribers.
I know. So I just had this guy over at my house to mm-hmm. do the coat rack, and he was like, what is it with like female comedians? They're all talking about farting these days. He's talking about your clip of, because I knew that was gonna be gold.
For anyone who didn't hear me talking about being bullied by teens for farting in the free feed, it's also a clip that we have shared on our social. And for our social, I would say it's doing better on TikTok than it's doing on Instagram. It's interesting. You never know what's going to do well where.
Know.
TikTok and Instagram are not a one-to-one.
They love the Grimace content. They love shit like that.
TikTok loved Grimace. TikTok loved everything with Neme, obviously. So did Instagram. And TikTok, like when we talk about Christian BBLs, too. And now it likes my fart story.
Yeah, I have to look back at the Christian BBL thing. The Christian BBL thing, wow, it was really such a blip. It was all anyone was talking about for like a few days. And then now,
that's the cycle of the internet.
Yeah. And I wonder if it was because so close to Jesus' birthday, we can't.
we can't be talking about this.
Christian BBL. Anyway, today's episode. Mm-hmm. Is about being dad.
Wow. A story that was not just a blip on the internet.
No, it was not.
A story that lasted many days.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess. I did not do the research for this episode, but...
What do you know about
the legacy of being dad remains for me. What I know about being dad is that he is a dad who tweeted... His daughter asked him for, like, to open beans... And he tweeted being like, my daughter asked for me to open a can of beans, but I want to teach her to be self-sufficient. So I'm not going to tell her how to open the beans. And I'm not going to like give her any guidance about opening them. And I know that this became a very big discourse on Twitter. And then I think it had like a very long life, but I remember it was one that I didn't closely follow at the time. But it was, like, inescapable. So I couldn't not know who Bean Dad was, but I wasn't, like, plugged into the Bean Dad of it all in the moment.
I mean, that's a pretty good synopsis of Bean Dad. And can you remember what year was Bean Dad?
Ooh, what year was Bean Dad? Honestly, this is just a gut reaction. 2018?
Interesting.
What?
It was 2021.
What? What? Oh my God. I just screamed into the mic. I'm so sorry, listeners, but what?
It was 2021. It was January.
How can that be?
January 2nd, 2021.
How can that be, Dad?
I remember at that time I was dating this guy and I was just like scrolling through Twitter and he's like, what's happening? And I kind of summarized it. And he's like, so do we like being dad or do we not like being dad? And, well, listeners.
Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. So who is being dad?
Okay.
Being dad is John Morgan Roderick, his Wikipedia says he's a musician, singer, songwriter, podcaster, and politician. He's the lead singer and guitarist of the rock band The Long Winters. And was a touring member of the rock band Harvey Danger and co-host the podcast Roderick on the Line and Omnibus. In 2011, he began co-hosting the Roderick on the Line podcast with Merlin Mann. I wanted to mention that because like I feel like if you started a podcast in 2011 and you're still doing it, you're going to have a loyal fan base.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I was like, okay, that's already an interesting detail to me that he was kind of like a public figure, sort of. So a lot of people.
He's 55 now. So, you know, he's not. Yeah, exactly.
So that's why. But he's not like famous that his name is like recognizable to people outside the people who know about his like things. So I feel like that's a perfect storm to have a bunch of people see your tweet, but not know who the fuck you are. And be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. And, you know, again, he's just like a really well-seasoned podcaster. In 2015, he has another podcast called Roadwork with co-host Dan Benjamin. Dan Benjamin also has a Wikipedia. So it's like he's with other well-known people. The podcasts are loose form, conversation-based. You know, and kind of like irregular. And then in 2017, the company How Stuff Works announced a new show called Omnibus.
I listened to a bunch of How Stuff Works podcasts for a long time and then I kind of fell off, but like.
That's a pretty big company.
Yeah, I used to listen to the How Stuff Works podcast, Stuff Mom Never Told You. Was there like feminism one? And there's like a conspiracy one. That's like stuff they don't want you to know. Yeah, I've listened to a bunch of them. They're usually pretty like good, kind of easy listening podcasts.
Well,
educational.
The show he hosts is called Omnibus. And he hosts it with former Jeopardy champion Ken Jennings.
Oh.
Who also, like, hosts.
Yeah.
And he hosted for a long time.
Yeah. No, Ken Jennings, like, I think his story is that, like, he was a contestant,
a champion
who became the host.
Yeah. So on that podcast, they alternate each episode. They discuss topics that they, quote, fear might be lost to history. Oh. Typically niche cultural trends and historical events. And, was running from December 2017 to August 2019 on iHeartRadio.
Oh, wow.
And then they shifted to Patreon.
Interesting.
So they have like a big, again.
Okay, so this is a guy who does have a lot, probably a lot of Twitter followers. And like, if you're someone who is a podcaster that podcasts like to a loyal audience and you're also like teaching them something, you know what I mean? It's historical. I feel like that could go to your head.
And
it's going to our heads as we teach about the internet. But I mean, if you're like, if people are like, wow, he's the smartest guy all the time.
And to me, these are other details about his life that inform how he is and like are useful to me.
Yeah.
But he's in Seattle. So it's like, he's Seattle and he's Gen X. So like those two things are like there's obviously art scenes and things happening in Seattle. But to me, that's not really a place where like people are getting challenged or you're confronted with the realities of day-to-day life.
Yeah.
You could like very easily live in your like suburban bubble or like,
yeah.
I mean, not that Seattle's a suburb, but like, whereas like somebody who has a following in New York, I have a lot of friends who have huge followings. They take the train, they see this, they're interacting with other artist friends, they're still, taking the bus. You have your foot on the ground.
I feel like in Seattle, and this is me speaking as someone who has not been to Seattle.
I've been, so yeah.
You can silo yourself off to other people who, like, think and look and feel exactly like you do.
Well,
and maybe
yeah.
become, and if on top of that, you're also, like, Mr. History Guy, and people think you're so smart, and people love all your ideas. I feel like that's a toxic combination to post something that makes you look really, really bad online.
Well, let's get into it.
Not having an awareness of how something will be received on kind of a massive level.
Well, Elise, on January 2nd, 2021,
wow,
John Roderick tweeted a thread and all hell
broke loose.
So,
like, days before January 6th. This was moments. We don't know if January 6th would have happened if this hadn't happened. We actually don't know.
True.
It could be directly, we don't know.
I think that the best way for me, I mean, I just really have to cover. I was trying to think of, like, how can I summarize both and, like, summarize these tweets and, like, the ridiculousness of it and everything. But, like, I just have to read all of
them. Yeah.
So, Elise, I'm going to read the tweets. I want you to count
okay. How
many tweets these are.
Okay.
So, I'm going to start. This is a lot.
Wow.
Just look at me scrolling.
Oh, my God. Millie just showed me the tablet, the podcast tablet, and it's many pages.
So yesterday, my daughter, (9), was hungry, and I was doing a jigsaw puzzle. So I said over my shoulder, make some baked beans. She said, how? Like all kids do when they want you to do it. So I said, open a can and put it in a pot. She brought me the can and said, open it how? This is tweet one. Next tweet. With a can opener, I said incredulous. She brought me the can opener, and we both stared at it. I realized I'd never taught her how to use it. Most cans now have pull tabs. I felt like a dope. What kind of apocalypse father doesn't teach his kid how to use a manual can opener? So I said, how do you think this works? Oh, yeah, sorry. So I said is a different tweet.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think this works? She studied it, applied it to the top of the can, sideways, She struggled she struggled for a while, and with a big dramatic sigh, said, "Will you please just open the can?" Apocalypse Dad was overjoyed. A teaching moment just dropped in my lap. I said, "The little device is designed to do one thing. Open cans. Study the parts. Study the can. Figure it out. Figure out what the can opener inventor was thinking when they tried to solve this problem." Parentheses. The can opener is also a bottle opener, but I explained that part was irrelevant. I went back to my jigsaw puzzle. This is a different tweet. She was sitting next to me, grunting and groaning, trying to get the thing. I should say that spatial orientation, process visualization, and order of operation are not things she intuits. I knew this would be a challenge, but it was a rainy weekend. Next tweet. Eventually, she collapsed in a frustrated heap. I said, "Explain the parts." She said, "This little wheel is meant to cut. These gears turn the wheel. When you spin the handle, this other wheel looks like a gear, but isn't." She couldn't figure out the clamping step, a key element. I said, "This tool is made to be pleasing, but it doesn't have any superfluous qualities. Everything that moves does so for a reason." She said, "I hate you." I'm sure.
She said, "I hate you."
I know. I'm sure she believes she does. I said, "You understand everything except how the tool addresses the can." She sighed. Next tweet. At this point, she said, "I don't want baked beans," and marched off. Apocalypse Dad went into full, quote, the road mode. Sweetheart, neither of us will eat another bite today until we get into this can of beans. She screamed, "Ah," like Lucy Van Pelt. She read a book for a while. Soon she was back at the can. The top was all dented now. The lip of the can was practically serrated from failed attempts. We studied the tool some more. She really wanted it to be oriented up and down or across the top of the can. The sideways orientation is very counterintuitive. Next tweet. She was fixated on orienting the tool in a few configurations and couldn't imagine other possibilities. I compared the can opener to other tools. By now, we are working on anger management and perseverance, too. She suggested she open the can with a hammer. There were tears. I said, next tweet, "The tool is made to be pleasing, but it doesn't have any superfluous qualities. Everything that moves does for..." Oh, wait, sorry.
I thought he was just saying it again. I was like, oh my God.
Here we go. Finally, she squeezed down on it. Although it was a misfire, a light went off in her head. Many times throughout the day, she yelled at me, "My brain is fuzzy. I can't think of anything else to try." And I'd say, "When your brain doesn't work, trust your hands." She felt the tool click over the top of the can, or over the lip of the can. I saw it in her hands. By this point, she developed a little ritual addressing the tool to the can, starting with it on a vertical axis and rotating it to the horizontal.
Oh, while clamping
down. I know, but like there's no other way to like clamping down in a single motion, a choreography. She looked down at me expectantly. This is different.
This is like a Substack post.
I know.
It's long.
Expectantly, excitedly, after 6 hours of trying, "You don't want to express too much hope. Was this another blind alley?" The can had been through hell. Label ripped off, dented, sharpened, burned. A veteran of 1,000 psychic wars. She knew, though. She set up again, carefully, and brought the swing-away bear on the can of the S&W baked beans with the meticulousness of Roger Moore extracting a detonator from an ICBM in The Spy Who Loved Me. A soft pop resounded in the room, so different from the other sounds we'd made.
Damn, I keep going. Oh my God.
She didn't look it up. She knew the action. A little baked bean sauce appeared. She savored each twist until the lid, as I hoped it would, rewarded her by standing perfectly at attention. Saluting her efforts and ingenuity, she was elated and carried it to the kitchen in both hands. She knew she was this was a next week. This was a commonplace task and a common tool, but this was serious business. She knows her dad and the stock I may put in these things. A more mechanically inclined kid might have figured it out in minutes. She factored the scale, but was rightfully proud. I'm proud of her too. I know I'm infuriating. I know this is parenting theater in some ways. I suffer from lack of perseverance myself. And like all parents throughout history, I'm trying to correct my own mistakes in the way I educate my child. She sees through this. The swing away can opener is a little voodoo doll for us now. It will reappear as an allegory many more times in her life. You can be sure. She knows this too. But this is an allegory of triumph. I wish I had more of those. I wish I had more stories like this. The only problem now is that she wants to open every fucking can in the house.
I blacked out during that. That was crazy. I couldn't possibly tell you how many tweets that was. I'm shook by how long that was. I thought that this was like one tweet where he kind of expressed that.
No.
That was, I mean, I feel vindicated on my read that he seems like someone who's very impressed with himself and thinks that he's very, very smart.
You know, and those were details that I felt like, the podcasting details I felt were so important. But to me, I want, because as we talk about, well, I just want to hear your impressions of the whole thing and like.
Oh my God. I mean, first of all, like, to send that many tweets, like, he obviously wrote that in like a document and then broke it up into tweets.
Because it was also back, it was also back when there was a 180 character.
Now it's 280. Now it's 280. So no, it was 140.
No, it was 140.
Yeah. And now it's 280. So that, I mean, first of all, like, the way that he writes just sends a shiver down my spine of like the type of person who is like, I explained to her that no parts were superfluous and that everything has meaning. And I'm like, oh my God.
Can you imagine working with this man?
I literally, the fact, like you saying that just like shook me to my core because I can't, like being with him, I can't even imagine like talking to this person about any subject.
And I think for me, like, well, something that like somebody had made, a point that was made in conversation about season 2 of The Bear was that everything that you know is because someone else took the time to teach you.
Yes.
And my niece, this summer, she's 15 now. She's 14 when she came. And she was like, she didn't know how to use a dishwasher.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like, here's how to do it. Load this up. Okay. And I like sat and I'm like, now you know how to do it. Like, you know, and it's just like, first of all, in the time that it took him to write all those fucking tweets, he could have fucking, and also like, I'm sure being a parent, there's little shit that happens like that every day.
Yeah.
That, like, your kids don't know. And it's like, just fucking do it. Like,
yeah, it's very, number one, the way that kids really learn stuff, as you were saying, is by a parent or adult or someone they trust saying, here is how you do this.
Yeah.
And then they watch you do it, and maybe they have to do it a couple of times or whatever. That's how knowledge is passed down.
Yeah.
Are there some things where you could maybe tell your kid, like, why don't you try to figure it out? Sure. Depends on what it is. But for your hungry kid to come to you, for you to realize, oh, I never taught my kid how to do this thing. That's not an intuitive thing. It's something that generally you have to be taught to do.
Yeah.
And instead of feeding them, I'm going to turn it into this
lesson.
He said 6 hour long lesson and say, we're not going to eat until you do this. It's like, once someone's crying, what's the fucking point? I maybe say once, how do you think this works? And then the little girl can say, I don't know. And then you go, this is how it works. And you open the can of beans, and she's learned how to open the can of beans just the same as your crazy fucking thought experiment. And I also, the thing that I really hated was that he kept going like, executive function is not one of her strong suits.
Yeah,
or
like,
she's nine. Yeah, I'm being like, she is not like mechanically minded. And I'm like, she's nine, first of all. And second of all, yeah, a kid that is mechanically minded will take upon themselves to figure out how a can opener works. Like, I know people who, when they were kids, they, like, took stuff apart and put it back together because that's what they liked. This kid isn't one of those kids. So don't try to force her to, like, do this weird science experiment for you.
Well, also, it's one thing if, like, I could have more grace if, like, the dad is a mechanic or a handyman and, like, there's always tools around the house and they always see the dad, like, doing shit and working on things and whatever. And then, dog, you're a fucking podcaster.
Yeah.
She's not getting these examples in your fucking house.
I know. And the way he keeps being like, apocalypse dad. So I'm like, okay, so like, because you're a doomsday prepper, you're going to put your kids through these weird fucking trials. Actually, your kid will be more prepared for the apocalypse if you just show her how to do some useful shit. And then
also,
she'll,
like,
know.
There'll be knives. In the like, she could have stabbed the fucking, like.
Yeah.
She said she.
Yeah, exactly. She could have used a hammer.
Or a hammer.
You wanted her to open it in the exact way that society wants her to open it. But once society's collapsed in the apocalypse, you're getting the can open. You're getting the can open.
But I'm also like, how fucking self-centered are you that you think that if society collapses, what's going to be left is a white dad
podcaster
in Seattle.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you.
Audible's best of 2024 picks are here. Discover the year's top audiobooks, podcasts, and originals in all your favorite genres. From memoirs and sci-fi to mysteries and thrillers, Audible's curated list in every category is the best way to hear 2024's best in audio entertainment. Like a stunning new full-cast production of George Orwell's 1984. Heartfelt memoirs like Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's Lovely One. The year's best fiction, like The Women by Kristen Hanna. And Percival Everett's brilliantly subversive James. Audible. There's more to imagine when you listen. Go to audible.com/imagine and discover all the year's best waiting for you.
You know that feeling when your favorite brand really gets you? Deliver that feeling to your customers every time. Memorable moments like these are key to building your business and your brand. Klaviyo turns your customer data into real-time connections across AI-powered email, SMS, and more, making every moment count so you can continue to build smarter, more meaningful relationships with your customers. Build smarter digital relationships with your customers and make every moment count with Klaviyo. Learn more at klaviyo.com/BFCM.
I do fully believe I will survive the apocalypse. I'll say that. I believe that I will.
Sometimes I'm like, I mean, I think I made this point before, but I'm like, the apocalypse movies, I'm like, I just wouldn't fight this hard to be.
See, the thing, like, is, I'm like, you will see me at the end of this earth with an eye patch, beret. Yeah.
I mean, I'll fucking do it.
You say Elise, and I go, no one's called me that.
Yeah.
No one's called me that since before. Since the before.
And I think, like, the pandemic, it was so funny because it was such a little thought experiment with, like, it wasn't an apocalypse. Like, things were still, but it felt like, I'm talking, like, early pandemic. It was so, we didn't know how long it was going to last.
Yeah.
All this stuff.
Well, it was like a test in, can you handle if shit gets really crazy?
Yeah, exactly.
How well can you handle?
In New York City in, like, March, April. So it was like my roommate fled, and it was just me by myself in my apartment. And then my little, like, pod was me and two friends.
Mm-hmm.
And one friend, I'm not going to name drop her, but, like, one friend, she just was completely, like, her mental health was, like, deteriorating. She didn't even want me to be around. Like,
yeah.
It would make her, everything was making her nervous. The other friend, me and her, like, we were, you know, we would look, oh, now there's to-go drinks. Like, we'd get a drink and, like, walk around. We go on a lot of walks. We went to the grocery store, like, tried out crazy recipes. That's, like, the thing. And it was, like, it's kind of, like, it reminded me of, like, a quiet place or, like, some things where it's, like, there are people, I'm, like, I'm still that mom who's going to throw a birthday party for a kid.
Yeah.
I'm going to do, like, because that's what we were doing. We're like, okay, well, let's have fun. Like, let's make cocktails.
Let's figure it out.
Make this crazy, like, meal that, whatever, because that's all we have is time, you know. So definitely just reminded me of that. Like, I'm definitely going to have the mindset and the puzzle, you know, to keep going.
You have the mindset to survive the apocalypse, but you don't think that you would that hard against, like, if, like, well, zombies, like, you know, and whatever.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just, like,
what version of apocalypse?
I'm not, like, drinking my own piss for 50 years. Like, to fucking, like, that's a little much, but I don't know. I probably would, you know.
But Bean Dad thinks that he would. That brings us back to the subject of Bean Dad, who definitely thinks he's surviving the apocalypse.
And, you know, again, I know that it was a lot. I know I read a lot. But I felt like in order to really understand the reaction and also, because that was shocking to me. I thought it was like two or three tweets. I remember seeing this. I didn't remember the whole thread. But it will contextualize the reaction, the backlash, everything.
I think it is important to read the whole thing because of the way he describes himself and, like, the language that he uses and just the sheer insanity of how long of a thing this is just to say that he didn't help his daughter open beans. The other thing that I thought while I was reading this is, like, I don't know if, like, he has a wife or if they're divorced or what, but I would be so fucking pissed if I left my fucking daughter with my stupid podcast husband. And I'm a stupid podcast wife. But if I left my daughter with my stupid fucking podcast husband and I came home and I said, what have you guys been doing all day? And he's like, oh, she asked me for lunch 6 hours ago and I've been forcing her to learn how to open a can, use a can opener for the last 6 hours, and she's actually really hungry, and, like, kids get fucked up by, like, being not on their schedule of, like, eating, sleeping, all of that stuff. She's nine.
Could you imagine if you're like, I'm gonna do something for myself, I'm gonna take myself on a spa day, and you get out of the spa and you see your husband's trending for not feeding your daughter. Because it was trending. It was like the number one topic immediately at the beginning of the year.
Literally, you're like, oh, I wonder what they've been up to. You check Twitter.
You see the Twitter. I just can't. Yeah, like, again, another he had it coming monologue.
Yes, like,
where it's like, listen, murder's wrong, but...
But you asked for... You asked for a lot of attention because he clearly posted this extremely long thing thinking that it was going to be read as really funny and cool and great parenting and look how smart you are. And it's like, you could not be further from how this makes you look.
Well, and let's talk about, now we're going to talk about responses. So this is an excerpt from a Refinery29 article. The condemnation from fellow Twitter users was obvious and swift. You're an asshole, dude, one Twitter user wrote. From one dad to another, this story is nothing to be proud of. A number of people pointed out how long the child had to wait in order to eat, to learn her lesson. That's also my thing. I'm like, 6 hours? Dog, you couldn't make a fucking beef Wellington. You could have handmade pizza, like, with fresh handmade dough.
I know. And instead, you're just gonna have, like, beans?
All of that for beans, bitch? You could have fucking slow-cooked chili, like, for 6 hours, like, for beans? Like,
right, and I'm also,
you.
Like, literally, is his nine-year-old just gonna put these beans on the oven and then...
On a pot.
And
I don't know, you know...
That's also... I would also be... Difficult. I know. I would also be pissed if I had my kid watch my daughter and I'm like, what did she have for lunch? And he's like, literally beans. I just gave her a pot, like, a can of baked beans. I didn't prepare them in any way. I didn't, not a vegetable, just a full can of beans.
I mean, that was also my concern, but like, I can't get into like white Seattle culture. I don't know.
What's acceptable to have for lunch there? I couldn't tell you.
I don't know. But I also, another thing that bothered the fuck out of me, I have to say, is that, okay, I was working on a dissertation. I had this really big report. This bitch was working on a fucking puzzle.
He's doing a puzzle.
You couldn't fucking not do your... Swear to God. A number of people pointed out, yeah. Somebody said, all I'm hearing is that time I told my dad I was hungry and he wouldn't let me eat for another 6 hours for no good reason or something. Others took issue with the term teachable moment, noting that Roderick didn't really take the time or energy to actually teach his child anything. Somebody tweeted, teachable moment means explaining how the can opener works, walking her through the process, and then letting her try on her own next time. Somebody else wrote, and of course, plenty of people took the time to give a more direct approach, just open the can and give your child beans, you psycho.
She could also, not for nothing, but like, cans are sharp, can openers are sharp. She could have hurt herself, too. She could have cut herself.
Nobody couldn't look away from the puzzle, at least. And then some, this person, Johannes Evans, wrote, being dad, like many bad parents, has taught his daughter essential lessons. Your needs are less important than mine. I will not help you if you ask me for help. I will praise myself for denying you help. My ego is always more important than you. I cannot be trusted.
Literally, all of that. Like, I'm like, wow. Okay, so she was 9 in 2021. It'll be a couple years, but we will eventually hear from Bean Daughter. We will eventually, I would put money on that one day Bean Daughter comes forward and tells her side of the story.
But I'm just like, I don't know, like, if you grew up with that as your dad, like, it's going to take a long time for her to unlearn that that's not okay. I don't know. Well, I don't know. Yeah,
she either literally already knows, or it's going to take a really long time for her to unlearn. I feel like it's one or the other, where it's like you realize extremely early on, oh my God, my dad is a huge asshole and I can't ask him for anything and he's really fucking annoying and other dads don't do this. Or you're like, no, this is good. My dad loves me. He made me not eat for six hours. It was totally fine. He posted online that I'm not technically inclined and that I'm not good at like doing tasks and it's fine.
Because I'm just thinking about like Jordan Peterson's daughter.
Yeah.
And like they do content together all the time. And it's
but
just
then
like,
you got Kellyanne Conway's daughter.
Well.
So she's either two paths. Being exactly those. There are two paths you can go.
I have hope for Barron Trump.
I will be very interested
to see.
I'll be very
because I remember,
interested to see.
I remember like it's like a vivid memory when Trump won and he was giving a speech and someone said yelled out something super racist, like, and tell all the Mexicans, something like that. Mm-hmm. And Barron Trump's eyes got so wide, and he was, like, shocked that someone said that.
Well, you have to, like, imagine, I mean, it's not like these are, like, he was at, like, a fucking middle school on the Upper East Side.
I went to that school, too.
Not to say there's not racism there, but it's, like, they know at least that you're not supposed to yell shit that
well,
kind of
this,
shit out.
Because I did a Story Pirates show there at his school, right? So if you have in your head, like, the school that Barron Trump goes to on the Upper East Side, I'm thinking uniform, Gossip Girl, super whatever. It was like this super cool, like, progressive school, like the cafeteria. They're like, oh, get whatever you want from the cafeteria. It was like a kind of bodega style. It felt like a college thing where, like, and it had, like, silk, little soy milks.
Oh, my God.
Like, that's the milk that they had. And you can get, like, chocolate, vanilla, and all this stuff, and snacks. And all the kids are wearing normal clothes. And it's, like, super liberal, progressive education. And, like, you know, I just, like, it wasn't what I thought.
It was not what you were thinking.
I mean, it looked like a really good school. It had, like, really good funding.
Yeah.
But, like... Yeah, and he didn't, remember, they didn't move right away, so, like, he did go to, like, a normal school. Then he probably moved to D.C. and went to some, like, crazy, insane.
Yeah, that's actually school. I do feel like they did a pretty good job of like not revealing any information about him. But yeah, he and Melania stayed in New York for a while.
And I remember I just remember specifically he was at that school when I went, because I went to go do a show there, and like the security process was just a little bit more intensive. I didn't perform for him.
Yeah.
But it was just more intense than like.
I wonder where he went in D.C. or what happened. Because I know the Obama girls went to Sidwell Friends, but I don't think he went to Sidwell Friends, which is a very fancy Quaker private school that fancy people in D.C. go to. And like the president's daughters will go to.
Maybe he went there. I don't know.
I feel like if he had gone to Sidwell Friends, it would have been a thing. Because the Obama daughters are like so associated with Sidwell Friends.
Interesting.
So, and for him to immediately go into, I feel like I would have heard if he went to Sidwell Friends.
Well, we gotta
move on.
No. Finally, there was backlash to the backlash. Mm. Or not back, I don't know if this counts as backlash to the backlash, but like, there is this whole, so most of the responses were like, you're an asshole. There was this tweet. It always goes here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I feel about this. I'm going to read it.
Okay.
Almost every single disabled and neurodivergent person can tell you a story of child abuse they've experienced that is similar to the way Bean Dad abused his child. Make sure your advocacy against child abuse includes disabled and neurodivergent children.
I think we've taken it a step too far. I think we've taken it a step too far with that. That is such a classic fucking Twitter thing.
That's why I included it.
Like, it's, nobody's not considering disabled and neurodivergent children in this moment. This isn't a story about a disabled neurodivergent child. Like, that's not what the story's about. And just because people...
He didn't say, I'm just like... He didn't say that she was neurodivergent.
No, he didn't say that. And so it's always very funny to be like, the people who are responding to this aren't specifically mentioning this group, so you hate that group, and you don't care, and you think it's okay for neurodivergent disabled children to be abused. And it's like, no, literally, I don't. It would be kind of more fucked up if he was like, my autistic daughter didn't know how to open a can, and so I made her sit there and stare at the can for 6 hours. I would be like, oh, we're calling CPS.
Yeah.
nobody's like, no, it's actually okay. And that's kind of what that tweet implied.
Well, yeah, exactly. And for me, too, I'm like, one, he didn't say that she was neurodivergent. Two, and this is where it gets testy for me. I'm like, was this child abuse? Like, the dad was a dick and, like, he did something shitty. But I don't know.
He was a dick. I think it's shitty not to feed your kid for 6 hours, but it's like, it's also that very internet thing of like being a dick who maybe caused some trauma for your kid. Like, she might have really negative associations with this experience. It's not the same as child abuse.
It always goes here, so that's what I thought it was.
Yeah,
so funny.
If he was like, I'm consistently not feeding my daughter when she's hungry because I make her do insane puzzles, then it would be a bigger conversation. But he's just being an asshole, and like, yeah, being an asshole can have negative effects, but it's not child abuse.
So I just thought that was so crazy, this tweet. And I was just like, it always has to go to somebody's always bringing up some shit that has not, like, and also, I just thought, like, I just don't think this is child abuse, and this is getting ridiculous.
I don't think it's child abuse, I think it's being an asshole.
Yeah, and that's different. So, Roderick eventually responded to the backlash, and he tweeted, the only thing people are touchier about than parenting style is dog ownership. Then he attempted
how not to deal with being the Twitter main character.
So he then attempted to like a few more follow-up tweets defending his parenting decision as well as his choice to share it with the public. before deleting his Twitter account entirely. Of course, deleting his account only fueled the backlash fire. So he got another backlash. Like, and he kept, like, trying to be funny and, like, double down and triple down and, like, be like, whatever. And it just wasn't working. And then he finally, like, left Twitter. And then that got a backlash where someone tweeted, "Well, imagine going out known as being Bean Dad," which is,
I think also part, I mean, it is like an outrageous story, but put out there by someone with a lot of followers. Like, there's a lot of different reasons that this went viral, but one of them is because it could be called a very funny name, which is Bean Dad. I think people like just say Bean Dad. It's like cellar door is considered like the most beautiful, like, English language. There's this thing about cellar doors supposed to be like the most beautiful thing. Like, I think Bean Dad has a ring to it, an internet ring.
Well, just like we went to the neurodivergent disabled path, we got to go down this path.
Okay.
Where some users, before he deleted his tweets, which I think has deleted his Twitter, which I think caused him to delete his Twitter, people were going down a deep dive of his content. And Elise,
okay,
it's not good. Heath Miller tweeted, "Okay, I've just been sent some of the greatest hits of Bean Dad. And I'm thinking, parenting aside, maybe he's not that good of a dude. Just throwing that out there." And the first tweet is from 2012, and it says, "At Dave Anthony, I'm going to rape you the next time I see you."
Oh my God.
Bad rape, not funny rape.
That's my God.
That's one tweet.
Wow.
The next tweet is from,
oh my God.
Yeah, the next tweet is from 2013, and it says, "Maybe the white half of you went to law school. Maybe the white half of you that went to law school can get the black half out of jail on some boohoo technicality."
What?
So I think he was replying to somebody who's biracial, who was a biracial lawyer, said, like, whatever.
What the fuck?
And then someone says, the fourth one, another says, he was responding, somebody said, I guess he was in an argument with someone, and that person, the same person, was like, "It sucks when people get off on a technicality. Wow, your Fourth Amendment rights were violated. Call mommy," or something. And then he says, "The Fourth Amendment has been perverted by activist Jew mud people apologist. The founders intended USA as a white homeland."
What?
Okay. And then finally, the last.
Oh my God, these are so bad.
These are so bad. The last one said, "My armor car just arrived and surprise, full of Jew lawyers. We're taking guns, taxing, then suing the survivors." So, to be fair, he grew up in Seattle and Alaska. So I'm pretty sure he's used to a white homeland.
Wow, those are really, really bad. Those are really, really bad because I had a feeling that this ended in his bad tweets being discovered. But in my mind, they were like tweeting a lyric with the N-word and like tweeting it out. Or
remember,
maybe having
Gen X. And,
yeah. Or,
you know, he's 55 now, so.
Or, like, saying some sexist stuff or maybe some fatphobic stuff. That's, like hate speech for real.
So this led to the podcast of My Brother and Me.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Bim Bam. I know them.
What is that podcast about?
It's three brothers, and they're, like, very charming, and they're kind of, they're, like, nice, and they're funny.
Well, for the longest time, they used John Roderick's song as their theme song for that podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So the song is called It's a Departure. And they were using it for a decade.
Oh, my God. And right. Yeah, because that is also a thing, is that it's a really long running podcast.
So they tweeted on January 3rd.
Wow, days, three days before January 6th.
3 days.
We have no idea that January 6th is about to happen.
For reasons we're sure you're all aware of, we're getting started finding new music for Mabim Bim. You'll probably hear a filler theme song on this week's episode. We're not sure what will come after that, honestly, but we hope you'll stick around to find out. Then the next week, we appreciate John for letting us use one of his songs as the theme for Mabim Bim for nearly a decade. But his response to today's situation is emblematic of a pattern of behavior that's antithetical to the energy we try to bring the things we do. So it's time for us to move on.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that what I know of that podcast, because I actually used to listen to a spinoff with one of the brothers and his wife called Sawbones that was about, like, medical history, and it was fun. I think they try to have a very wholesome vibe. So having someone who's tweeting, "I'm going to rape you,"
not the funny
is probably
rape.
Not.
What is the funny rape, by the way?
Yeah. Someone who's tweeting, like, the United States was meant to be white. That's, I think, not the vibe that those dudes are going for, really, at all.
Well, Ken Jennings.
I forgot that Ken Jennings now has to respond.
Ken Jennings, like, this is what Ken Jennings wrote. "If this reassures anyone, I personally know John to be a loving, attentive dad who tells heightened for effect stories about his own irascibility.
Irascibility, I bet. That's how these guys talk. That's how these fucking guys talk.
So he tells heightened for effect stories about his own irascibility on like 10 podcasts a week. This website is so dumb. And then somebody replied, "What about his weird anti-Semitic shit?" And then Ken Jennings said, "If we're word searching through old tweets now, it's pretty easy to find what he actually thinks about anti-Semitism. On our show, he's always the pro-Israel one." Which now, I mean, now we know pro-Israel does not equate anti-Semitism.
Like, yeah, does not equate anti-Semitism,
exactly.
Miss Elise Stefanik.
Well.
The thing is, if we're word searching old tweets, I've deleted my Twitter, but I did word search my old tweets in the past, and guess what? I wasn't saying any stuff. Like,
I know.
I wasn't saying, yeah, America should be white. I'm going to rape you.
I mean, my tweets, I definitely, one time, like, I did this, like, game or something where they made you explain your old tweets, and somebody resurfaced, like, a tweet from, like, 2012 where I was like, "I'm cleaning my room for this date, so I better get my pussy ate."
Yeah, like, I'm not saying my old tweets wouldn't be able to embarrass me, but I'm saying they're not, again, white supremacist hate speech,
no,
which is crazy. And that's the thing is, like, I don't think Mabim Bam or Ken Jennings would have had to say anything if it was just the Bean Dad conversation. But once these tweets come up, then it's like, yeah, you actually can't. This is actually really bad.
Yeah. So, John wrote an apology, and I want you to read the apology.
Okay.
And it is long.
Oh, yeah, I'm like, well, if the original story is how long it was, I mean, this is going to be... Okay. It's titled, "An Apology." It's actually titled and dated, "Seattle, January 5th, 2021.
Like, he could not ask for a better, like...
Yeah, I guess that's one way to stop being the trending topic.
Yeah. Like, being dead was out of everyone's mind.
Yeah.
It literally was a life cycle of less than a week.
Yeah, it's like, bro, you actually have 24 hours and then we're going to have a lot on our mind.
People are going to steal Nancy Pelosi's PowerPoint computer.
Yeah, exactly. There's actually going to be shit on the walls of the Capitol in like 24 hours. So, all right, title, "An Apology." "Hi, ... I deactivated my Twitter yesterday in a panic. I had to reflect on what I'd done and the hurt I'd caused, and my mind was clouded by an unprecedented flow of new information. Can you guys tell I've been recording audiobooks all week? I want to acknowledge and make amends for the injuries I've caused. I have many things to atone for. My parenting story's insensitivity and the legacy of hurtful language in my past are both profound failures. I want to confront them directly. My story about my daughter and the can of beans was poorly told.
Yeah.
I didn't share how much laughing we were doing, how we had a bowl of pistachios between us all day as we worked on the problem, or that we'd both had a full breakfast together a few hours before. Her mother was in the room with us all day and alternately laughing at us and telling us to be quiet while she worked on her laptop. We all took turns on the jigsaw puzzle. I frame the story as me as an asshole dad because that's my comedic persona. Oof. And my fans and friends know it's a bit. What I didn't understand when posting the story was that a lot of the language I used reminded people very viscerally of abuse they'd experienced at the hand of a parent. The idea that I would withhold food from her or force her to solve a puzzle while she cried or bind her to a task for hours without a break all were images of child abuse that affected many people deeply. Rereading my story, I can see what I'd done. I was ignorant, insensitive to the message that my pedant dad comedic persona was indistinguishable from how an abusive dad acts, thinks, and talks. I woke up yesterday to find that I had become hashtag beandad. I was a locus for a tremendous outpouring of anger and grief. It took me hours to fully gasp. I reread the story and saw clearly that I'd framed it so poorly, so insensitively. Beandad, full of braggadocio and dickhead swagger, was hurting people. I'd conjured an abusive parent that many people recognized from their real life. I am deeply sorry for having precipitated more hurt in the world, for having prolonged or exacerbated it by fighting back and being flippant when confronted, and for taking my Twitter feed offline yesterday instead of facing the music. I wish the parents I modeled didn't exist. I wish no one had to grow up with a parent who tortured them physically or emotionally. I would never intentionally make light of those experiences, and I'll never underestimate again the pain I can cause with some poorly chosen words and by acting defensively when challenged. As for my racist, anti-Semitic, hurtful, and slur-filled tweets... Sorry. Just as you're typing that sentence, you have to have a moment where you're like, fuck... As for the many racist, anti-Semitic, hurtful, and slur-filled tweets from my early days on Twitter, I can only say this. All of those tweets were intended to be sarcastic. I thought that being an ally meant taking the... Oh, no. Okay. I thought that being an ally meant taking the slurs of the oppressors and flipping them back to mock racism, sexism, homophobia, and bigotry. I am humiliated by my incredibly insensitive use of the language of sexual assault in casual banter. Hold on, I'm going to take that sentence again. I am humiliated by my incredibly insensitive use of the language of sexual assault in casual banter. It was a lazy and damaging ideology that I continued to believe long past the point that I should have known better, that because I was a hipster intellectual from a diverse community, Seattle, it was okay for me to joke and deploy slurs in that context. It was not. I realized sometime in the early part of the decade, helped by real-life Twitter friends and real-life friends and Twitter friends too, that my status as a straight white male didn't permit me to repurpose those slurs as people from disenfranchised communities might do. They were injurious regardless of my intent, because the words themselves have power and because actual violence is often prefaced by people saying, I'm not racist, but that was wrong. So I stopped. Yesterday, those old tweets resurfaced and hurt a lot of people anew. People who are close to me, people in my community who couldn't square those words with the person they knew me to be, and people who don't know me, going about their business yesterday, had to see those awful slurs and feel the hurt those words inspire. They had to suffer this asshole hashtag beandad casually demeaning them and their friends. I deeply regret having ever used those words. I do not want to spread more hate in the world. I want the opposite. My language wasn't appropriate then or now, and reflecting on that has been part of my continuing education as an adult who wants to be a good ally. That education is ongoing, and this experience will have a profound effect on the way I conduct myself throughout the rest of my life. I'm a middle-aged, middle-class, straight white male, and I try to be cognizant of that and of the responsibility my privileges entail in everything I do. In this case, it was precisely my privilege of not living in an abusive family, of not being a member of a community that routinely experiences real trauma, that caused me to so grossly misjudge the impact of the language I chose. I have a lot more reflecting to do in the coming days, so I'll be taking a hiatus from public life, Selena Gomez, to let some of these lessons sink in. I apologize to my partners, my friends, and to the people affected by my words for the hurt I caused. Whew. He really thinks he's a good writer, and he's not. He thinks that he is really good on the page, and he actually just kind of said the same thing over and over again for many, many sentences and came off not very genuine, I would say.
I feel like there's a whole, before we get into the apology, there's a whole genre of people, and I come up with this a lot, like, I think because how I look and all this stuff, like, and it's insecurity or whatever, of like, people don't really think I'm as smart as I am, mm-hmm. or, you know, nuanced or critical, like, able yeah. to, like, and I feel like I have, even Cardi B, like,
yeah.
just, that's somebody who, like, that's, like, a gold star of, like,
yeah.
she's very analytical, she's very whatever. But
and people are always like, Cardi B said, like, this thing about the economy, and it's like, well, yeah, she's
yeah, but exactly.
gets the same fucking push alerts as you, dude.
But the inverse
is this,
is that mm-hmm. there are people who think because they're white men and they use big words that whatever, that they're the fucking smartest people in the world. And yeah, so how do you feel about this apology? Like,
I think it gave me, because of the length of it and, like, the flowery language of it and the way he's, like, kind of falling over himself, it gave me a very similar ick to the original thread, which yeah. is not what you want to do. I think there were some genuine pieces in there.
Yeah.
But if I were Beandad's editor, you got to make it less than a page. You got to make it, like, screenshotable. Yeah. Like, that's the beauty of the Notes app apology, yeah. is that you got to just say, like, I'm sorry. I did not realize that it would conjure up these images for people. My old tweets are totally unacceptable. I'm sorry to everybody that I hurt. I'm going off social media to focus on what matters.
I know. I think the two... So, there was... Like, to me, it wasn't the worst apology because there was acknowledgement of, like this was unacceptable, yeah. or, like, I fucked up, which I think is important.
Yeah, I think and you have to detailed, say specifically.
And he detailed how he fucked up. The thing that really bothered me, and this is a trigger for me because one time, like, and I think I've brought this up a few times about how I was shopping in the Berkshires.
Yes.
And I got accused of shoplifting, and I wasn't.
I remember that.
And I was humiliated and whatever, and it was, like, really intense for me. And then I posted about it, and then it went viral a little bit, and then the store owners reached out to me, and his apology reminded me of the store owner's apology. And the store owners, what they said to me, which I never posted anything that they said to me.
Yeah.
Because I, you know. Well, what they said to me was, like, we didn't discriminate against you, but we understand that you live in this world where that is a reality that you live in, and that's like an unfortunate, that's an unfortunate part of your reality.
Yeah.
Is that people, and they never even outright said like racism or whatever. Like,
no.
They're like, we understand that you live in this reality that where you're discriminated against. We were not engaging in that. Like, but we understand how these actions could be interpreted as that. But we were basically discriminating against you because we thought you were a college kid. And we get that's their excuse, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, just completely skirting the whole thing of like, they're not an active member in the society where that's a reality of.
Yeah.
They view themselves as a separate part of the reality of discrimination and racism.
Yeah, and they're also not aware enough to know what it means to go up to a Black woman who's shopping in your store and accuse her of shoplifting. Like, to have no awareness of that and then be like, this moment taught me that it's actually fucked up to do that. And it's like, wow, you guys are, those are like boomer people, right? Who own that store.
No, they were Gen X. And this guy's Gen X. Like, they were not that old. The woman was like in her 40s, like couldn't be over 46. Like both of them. And then it became this whole thing. I didn't respond. And like, I mean, not to get too much in that situation, but like, then they tried to guilt me and said like, my wife's having ideation.
Oh, yeah. I remember. Like, well, that I remember is that they were like, people are giving our store one-star reviews and my wife is going to kill herself because of it. And it's like, okay.
And yeah. So that frame, again, that triggered me when I read, when I heard the apology, that triggered me into that kind of thinking of like, this toxic thing where it's like, well, I'm not racist, but I can see that other people live in this reality and I wasn't cognizant of it. So this is excusing my, but it's just like, you're an active beneficiary, participant, and all this shit of this stuff. And that's one thing I didn't like about. And the other thing that I didn't like about his apology is like, just a huge fucking faux pas. I can't believe it's taken this long for us to get into it, of like, tweet and delete. That shit bothers the fuck out of me. I understand you don't want, I get it, whatever, but I hate when people fuck up and they delete the whole thread.
Yeah.
So that, like, what? So what? Like, you know, especially if people are having conversations about what's wrong with this and stuff, I hate that. And
I feel like I'm less, I guess I understand. Well, I deleted my Twitter. It wasn't because I had become Bean Dad, but I do get the impulse. Like, the two times that I've had tweets where like people, like the wedding tweet that I had that people had conversation about, and the and then one time I tweeted about bodegas, I did delete them because I was like, I don't want to get these notifications anymore. So I think I'm more of a proponent of tweet and delete. Like, I think, I guess I just feel like you're allowed to delete stuff if you want. And but the internet's forever. It's not like, you know, the thread still exists.
I guess for me, your thing of like weddings, right? That's one thing.
Yeah.
But to me, I'm like, if you tweet something racist and people are having a dialogue about it and like things are coming up and you just delete, like, to me, I'm just like, no, like, accept responsibility for your, okay, you don't want kids that you're like that. Those are different things.
Yeah, I guess I
think you're always entitled to delete whatever. But to me, when there's like real conversation and dialogue being had on your shit and you're receiving like consequences for your actions and stuff, I think it's cowardly. There's another. Like,
I do think when it gets into racism and hate speech and stuff, it's a little bit different. Like, if the racist tweets had not come up and they were like, oh, he deleted the thread and deleted Twitter because he was being dead, I'd be like, okay, I guess you just don't want to be trending on Twitter. Like, it, whatever. You don't have to, like, let yourself be trending on Twitter as being dead if you don't want to. But it is a little different for you to delete immediately after all the racist stuff comes out.
Well, and, like, to be doubling down and then just delete it, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just again, that's a whole other triggering thing of like this Facebook group. I feel like you were in of like, I'm not going to say the name, but like a female comedian.
Oh, the Facebook group of female comedians.
Not
the email chain.
No.
Different from the email
chain. A different one that was smaller.
Yes.
And more exclusive.
Yes. And it was like, yes. And it was originally for like
wellness
and shit. And then it became about everything in the world.
Well, so this one woman posted in this group.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, she posted, hey, my manager's saying that I'm not getting auditions because I'm white. And then everyone else, which is mostly a white women group, was like, oh, that sucks, like, blah, blah. And then I'm like, I posted, hey, as a woman of color, this is fucked up.
Yeah, like, this is a crazy thing to post in the book. Yeah, I remember,
And then she deleted the whole thing, and it was like, we were having things where, like, finally people were like, yeah, you're right, I'm sorry, like, I didn't realize, or like, yeah, this is a harmful, like, thing to be spreading. And then she just deleted the thing, and I'm just like, well, fuck you, like,
yeah.
Fuck that, like, don't do that. Like,
yeah, I think in the context of a Facebook group, I also feel different, like, because it's like, these are actually real, you're having interactions with, like, literally real people that you are, like, that you know, and this is actually, like, an interpersonal situation that is happening amongst people that are known to each other. I guess I understand being, like, I don't want to be the Twitter main character. I'm going to try to delete all this stuff and, like, stop getting these notifications and try to stop it. Even though I don't think, as we saw, I don't think it usually works.
It doesn't work by then.
Once you get to the status of being Bean Dad, it's not going to work.
Yeah. I also hate it. I mean, and the whole reason why, again, like, the whole reason... And again, this also just reminds me of the Noah Schapp thing.
Oh, yes.
Like his shitty apology. I mean, this isn't as bad. This is a better apology.
Noah Schnapps was really, really,
was
really,
really bad. But I wanted you to read the whole entirety of those tweets, because Ken Jennings being like, oh, Twitter sucks. Or this guy being like, oh, my thing was misinterpreted. And it's like, no, you wrote 40 tweets. And it just reminds me of Noah Schnapp being like, my words were misconstrued.
And yeah, it's my views are being misconstrued. And it's like, I don't know, you were in a video that had people holding, like,
no,
Zionism is sexy,
like, over
stickers.
Like, yeah, like, and it's like, no, you tweeted 40 times about this. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's not that Twitter sucks. Like,
yeah,
Twitter does suck, and, like, but not this time, bitch.
And you carefully constructed an image of yourself, again, as this, like, mean bean dad who's going to make your daughter, like, open this can of beans. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's actually not something for mass consumption on Twitter for people who don't fucking know that that's your comedic persona, quote unquote. Like, and it is weird to me that you're going to do 40 tweets and you're never going to mention... like, according to this apology, that you guys were laughing and you were actually eating other stuff and you were like, I made her some other food and I said, let's work this out together. Like, there's a way to, if that's actually true, you could have told the story and be like, I wanted to make my daughter learn how to open a can of beans, but I also fed her and we were laughing and it wasn't like that.
But again, it's this whole thing of, like, his whole excuse is like, I forgot that we live in a world, but it's like, you're so privileged that you're not even cognizant of how you're working. And I mean, it is the privilege of being a white man, straight white man, Gen X, whatever, of like, yeah, you're not caught. Like, you get to live your 50 something odd years of life not having to think about how your words and actions affect people, because they never have. And also his whole thing about, like, so that was crazy to me. And then it was like this whole thing about, like, oh, well, all racism was sarcastic.
I mean, and that, like, was the craziest part to be like.
And I wanted to, like, reuse the thing of the oppressor. It's like, bitch, you are the oppressor.
Yeah.
You're a white straight man, dog. Like,
you can't.
You are the fucking oppressor. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, like, I appreciate some of what he's saying about being like, I thought that because I was, like, a known hipster liberal that I could like do that I could
fair, yeah.
That I could like
sorry.
Yeah, that I could like play around, like that I could like speak to it, or like that I had something that I could twist it around or whatever. But again, it's like you can't. That's a very good lesson for all comedic people. Anyone trying to make anything funny should learn is that like you really can't play around with slurs that don't belong to you. Like,
I mean, yeah, and to be fair, that really was like 2012, 2013, like when he was tweeting this, like, to be fair, that's when a lot of these like a lot of the slur tweets that like come back to haunt people are from this era of like people were working through that and were trying to like be edgy and all this bullshit and like whatever. So like I can give grace there. You know, again, it wasn't a completely terrible apology, but
he should not have made it that long.
He shouldn't have made it that long.
Like, that yeah. kind of, to me, is I'm like, well, you fundamentally didn't learn your lesson because this is too fucking long.
Yeah.
It should be one page, screenshotable. I really fucked up. I did a lot of harm. I did the harm in XYZ ways. I did not realize how my story was going to come across, but I see what people mean now. I'm sorry, Bean Dad out.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, the story was poorly told. And it's like, why don't you just admit you suck?
I do feel like it is a very Gen X dude thing to think that this, like, mean, ornery, smart guy persona is like, funny or, like, fun. It's very, it feels tired to me in the way that, like, Gen Z will make fun of millennials for having kind of like a YouTube person for being yeah. like peppers, even though I don't think actually millennials talk like that, but
whatever. Gen Z like cries if they have to like call someone on the phone. So.
Yeah. Gen Z can't use a can opener. That's for sure.
Well,
but, but I do feel like that's a very distinctly Gen X persona that has very much gone out of favor to be like, ornery, smart, white guy, nerd, who's like, you should, it does not have any superfluous qualities, but it is, it does, yeah, all the pieces are like, working. And
like, hot girl, like, you know, dumb, or like, hot girls are dumb, and nerds are smart and cool, and whatever, yeah. and bullshit, like, kind of Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, it's cool to be a little mean, and kind of, like, not very nice, and have no social graces. Yeah, exactly. I feel like that is a persona that has fallen deeply out of favor, at least in the way that it was expressed in his weird thread.
And I feel like that's what he was, like, kind of coming to terms with, is like, oh, this shit, like, it's a little dosage of the bad faith thing.
Yeah.
But also, like, you wrote 40 tweets about, if it was one tweet, like, I could give grace to, like, one tweet.
I genuinely thought it was at max 3 tweets of him being like, I made my daughter figure out how to open a can of beans. I did not know that it was, like, this short story, this novella
yeah.
like, that you wrote. And that's what makes it a lot worse.
Yeah, and like, doesn't make me want to give him grace. Like,
it also makes it a lot harder to be like, my words were misconstrued.
Or that, oh my god, Twitter sucks.
Yeah. No, you took a lot, and you obviously, he very obviously wrote that as like a short story piece,
yeah,
and then
it flopped.
Put it on Twitter.
Yeah, it flopped.
Like, so it's just very funny. It's so different than if you just fire off a tweet that's like one or two tweets and it's clearly in the middle of your day and like the way Twitter is often used, which like you're just not really thinking about it. And then you move on and then you're like, oh shit, you know what? I didn't really think about this before I sent it. I fucked up, whatever. It's like this, like you edited this, like you yeah. sat down, you, this was literally like a short story.
And that's why it pisses me off that like, he deleted it, because I'm just like, you flopped, babe.
Yeah.
You flopped, and your shit's coming back to haunt you. I don't think you're a terrible human being, whatever, but sit in it.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. So.
At least until tomorrow, because tomorrow is January 6th. And yeah. you. And you.
Well, you know, an update. John is out here. He's thriving. He's still posting. He has 17,000 followers on Instagram. He posted a picture of his boots yesterday. He's posting a boat every day on Instagram.
Cancel culture isn't real.
Cancel culture isn't real.
You can be Bean Dad and you can come back.
Well, there's a podcast where it's titled Bean Dad Redemption Arc. And here's the description. And then I'm going to tell you, and then I have like a game.
Okay.
So this is the description. Musician and podcaster John Roderick's most enviable accomplishment was becoming Twitter's main character from January 3rd through January 5th of 2021. We're cracking open that can of beans to get the real story and talk about surviving cancellation, losing friends, and what we can learn about broader cultural friends. So it's this podcast. Can you guess who hosts this podcast that brought John Roderick?
Is it Jordan Peterson?
No.
I'm like, did Jordan Peterson?
The clue is it's a woman.
It's a woman. Barry Weiss?
Amanda Knox.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
So it's on the Amanda. So if you're curious.
Very funny.
I know. So if you're
like,
curious,
Amanda Knox, you don't have to associate yourself with Bean Dad. You were wrongly accused.
Well, the her podcast is called Labyrinths, Getting Lost with Amanda Knox. And it just goes deep dive into different things. And there's an episode on Bean Dad. So you can hear from the horse's mouth for an hour and a half.
Wow, she interviews Bean Dad for that amount of time.
An hour and a half at least.
I mean, it makes sense. He's definitely very loquacious. That's probably the word he would use to describe himself, is loquacious.
Well, I mean,
that was a lot.
That was a lot.
That was a long journey, and it was not great. Your anchoring wasn't great. It's that the journey of Bean Dad. Your anchoring was perfect, and your voice sounded amazing.
Yeah. No voice at all. Tweets,
but it was just, it was shocking the length of these, like, things that he was sending out. I really, yeah.
Edit
your shit. Kill your darlings.
Kill your darlings.
That's, someone needed to tell him also, kill your darlings,
dude. Kill your darlings. Well, that was another episode of our special series, Search History.
Wow.
Where we deep dive into a certain thing. Give us a positive rating or review if you like what you heard.
And we should have a poll up right around when this comes out, or before, or a little bit after. I don't think we've decided about the next search history.
Yeah. So we'll decide what we want to get into.
Yeah. So make sure that you, I think it's only $10 patrons that can vote.
I feel like everyone can vote. Only $10 patrons can listen, right?
Yeah. So the next one, this one will be available to $5 and $10 patrons. The next one that you guys vote on will be available to the $10 patrons.
Yeah, so bump up. We need the money, guys. We're dying.
Bump that $5 up and get all of the search history content.
Yes. Well, there goes another episode of Go Touch Grass. Bye.
Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.